Hello, you're very welcome to the iWin podcast. Don't forget to check us out on the web at www.iwin.ie. Today, I'm talking to James Martin from Martin Insurance. We're going to have a little chat just about insurance, things to look out for, pitfalls, that kind of thing. So, James, thanks very much for joining me.
No problem. Thank you.
Just first kind of question is, are there many insurers that would be available to iWin members, you know, to the woodworking industry at large in Ireland?
For companies paying up to about 20,000 euros per year, there's probably only about five insurance companies that are available to those members. I'm talking about for liability and property insurance. There's a few more options on the fleet side, but I guess most people's bulk of premiums going into liability and property insurance. So there's a very limited market for companies that are paying up to 20,000. Once you go over 20,000, it opens up a wee bit in the London market. So you have a few more underwriters there that kind of start at a minimum 20,000 level. So for the bigger businesses, there are more options in London. And then for any business that has exceptional risk management, you know, like sprinkler systems, some insurers like Aviva and Zurich and Allianz that maybe usually wouldn't really look at a woodworking type risk will kind of consider those exceptional risks. So again, there would be a few more options there.
Okay, so there's a bit of room for discussion once the risk management systems are in place, as you say. Would there be an option for members to go to European countries or companies rather to get quotes? I mean, is there scope to look to the European market for insurance for our members?
Well, it's a question that does come up from time to time where companies have maybe this idea of going to Europe. But the reality is that the insurers come, any European insurer who wants to be in the Irish market comes here and opens an office here and employs underwriters here. So the prospect of going out to Germany or somewhere like that and finding an insurance company to write a risk in Ireland is not really a realistic one. If a German company wants to be in the Irish market, they will come to Ireland and employ underwriters that are familiar with this market and they will come here to do the business.
Yeah, well, I mean, it does make sense. I mean, if they're going to conduct business in the country, they want to know the market and have, as you say, underwriters and explored all of the various nuances of it. Just what kind of reasons would there be then to explain why there are such limited options for timber and joinery businesses when it comes to insurance? I mean, is it a particularly risky business or you know, what's making it such a limited market?
It is considered to be a high risk sector. So you have fires on a reasonably regular basis. Maybe, I don't know, even if it's only one a year, the payouts for fires are very severe and very significant. And that scares a lot of insurance companies away from the sector. And then liability claims are kind of frequent enough, and they can be bad enough claims in the sector. Obviously, the use of saws, guys losing fingers, that kind of thing can be expensive. So again, that would be something that just would keep some insurers away from the sector. And then I suppose with insurance companies, because they have the choice of the entire economy to pick where they want to go, the woodworking sector would just be identified by a lot of them at the start of the year as a sector they just want to stay away from.
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously, insurance companies like us all are managing risk. So, I mean, it does kind of explain that. But apart from, say, employer and public liability insurance and property and damage business interruption insurance, what kind of other insurances should members be considering? So if they come to you and they're looking for a broad scope in their policy, what sort of things should they include to kind of cover all of the angles?
Well, there's a few areas that I would probably, obviously your obvious ones are your employers and public liability, your property damage, your business interruption, your motor insurance for your vehicles. Motor insurance on forklifts and any mechanically propelled plant, I would say, is something that people should look out for. If a forklift is moving from A to B on private property, and it is involved in an accident, that's probably a motor accident, and it would be would fall back on a motor policy, regardless of whether it's on a public road or private property. So motor insurance and forklifts and other mobile plant is important. Contractors all risks will be one that might be relevant for any business that is, especially in fit out work, carrying out site works, and where there's potential for damaged materials on site, or maybe plant on site, hired in plant, that kind of thing. Cargo policy for any cargo, in maybe if somebody's bringing in container loads of product from Asia or whatever it is, or maybe sending out container loads of product out to the States or wherever it is, that could be relevant. Professional indemnity may be relevant if the business involved in design or providing technical advice. So there'd be some additional areas.
Would you say that when the members come to you, that they should basically give you as much information as possible? Would you have a checklist that you'd go through with them so that you can get as much information from them as possible? Just pure curiosity.
Yeah, we normally have fact finds that would capture the key information without overloading people.
Yeah.
So, and then we would, you know, we'd be hitting off the main areas like your liability, property damage, motor areas like that. And then we can, you know, there's probably, there could be 20 other policies I could talk to a customer about, but generally you get to a certain point and nobody wants to spend an endless amount of money on insurance policies. So you're trying to get to the point at which, like, they certainly, you want your customers to have the key policies and then discuss the additional ones with them, depending on what their requirements are.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's just sort of tailored to need, we might say. Just professional indemnity cover is an interesting one. I'm just curious how it applies to IWIN members. It's kind of like a sort of a specialist, sort of a sector of insurance with insurance, maybe, is it? In terms of, you know, what would it cover? I mean, is it related to defective product or poor workmanship, or is it design, or what kind of areas is that covering?
Professional indemnity is something that probably has only become common for manufacturing and construction contracting type businesses in recent years. The key thing, I suppose, about professional indemnity insurance is when a problem blows up, if you can track it back to a design error or some sort of a professional error, that's where your professional indemnity will respond. So it excludes specifically any poor workmanship, any defects in the product. It really comes back to, it has to come back to a design error. That's really the key to it, you know.
Okay, fair enough. Just broadly speaking then, how are insurance rates calculated? I mean, what sort of, how do you kind of work out the insurance rate, if you know what I mean?
Well, I suppose there's different ratings for different policies. Employer's liability would tend to be a rate applied to the projected wage roll for the coming year. So you would generally give a split wage roll between woodworking, employees involved with woodworking equipment, maybe fitters, office workers, supervisors, and then there will be a rate applied to each category to come out at a premium. And then at the end of the year, a declaration will be provided in terms of the actual, how much was paid out, and an adjustment will be calculated. Public liability tends to be a rate applied to the projected turnover. Property damage and business interruption is generally a rate applied to the total sum insured. And then those rates are tweaked up or down depending on the underwriter's view of the risk, which will be taken into account things like previous claims history or health and safety, fire risk management, alarms, sprinklers, that kind of thing. But obviously then the underwriters would generally, they would have general rates that would apply to sector. So you know, risk selection is important, but they would tend to have kind of a general ballpark rates that would apply, you know.
Okay, well, and just in terms of the ballpark rates, things like having good health and safety, maybe sprinkler systems and whatever, I understand there's a ballpark rate, but the more that members can do, maybe they might fall slightly lower on the ballpark rate rather than going up the scale. Would that make sense? You know, the more safe we can be, the better, probably.
Exactly. Yeah. The better your risk management. You know, once that's communicated to the insurance companies through the broker, then that's going to put a downward pressure on rates, because insurance companies are going to look at the presentation and the risk and be keen to get that piece of business. So they will offer a better rate and they'll tweak the rates down. And you'd also obviously, you know, the better your risk management, you might have an insurance company quoting that otherwise wouldn't quote, and their rates might be lower than a competitor. And then obviously if it's a risk with particularly good risk management, for example, a sprinkler system, then some of the larger insurers, like SSA or maybe your Allianz or Avivas or Zurichs, might decide that they will quote for that particular risk, and their rates, you know, might be lower again. So the risk management is key to getting the best rate available out there, you know.
Yeah, no, okay, that's absolutely fair enough. What would some of the pitfalls be that our members would need to look out for if they're purchasing insurance? If they go to an insurer and they're, you know, what sort of pitfalls could there be, things they'd need to be aware of?
Well, I would definitely say to people to try and at some point read your policy documents, even though I know that's not really a very enjoyable experience for anybody, but be drawn to the warranties and conditions within the policy documents. So a lot of companies will find that there is what's called a recce cert or electrical certificate condition within their policy, which requires them to have periodic inspection report by a registered electrical contractor done at least once every probably 3 years. So that's written into a lot of policies these days. And if you do have a fire, you know, the adjuster is going to ask for a copy of that. And if you can't hand it over, then you're in trouble, you know. So that will be something definitely that people need to look out for. You know, there's going to be other things in the policy, like machinery guarding conditions, PPE conditions, maybe conditions around that there's systems to remove waste. It could be like sweep up waste daily and remove it from the premises once a week, or some kind of a wording around that. And again, if you do have a claim or a fire or liability claim, and an adjuster is appointed, which may bring along a forensics, they're going to be asking on that stuff. And if you can't answer positively, then you could be in trouble, you know, with your claim. So, you know, definitely looking at the warranties and conditions is key.
Okay, just the reason I'm asking some of these questions, that some of them might seem sort of stupid, but it just brings out those little bits of information, those nuances. For example, as you say, with the recce certification, that it has to be done every 3 years, and things like that are really good to know. And I know when you say reading your policy is very much the last thing any of us wants to do, I think that applies for even any of us driving a car, Anthony. You don't want to look at it. But just one little thing in relation to that, if somebody had any query on a policy booklet that you sent out, they'd be able to ring you and you'd be able to talk them through it. You know, sometimes there's a little bit of jargon there, but I'm sure you'd be more than happy to discuss it with them.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. 100%.
Yeah, no, that's okay, perfect. I'm just wondering, maybe in relation to our industry, what would some of the common types of claims be, and would they be costly? You know, obviously some claims might have a greater impact on my renewal quote than the next one. And I'm not entirely sure if this would apply to the woodworking industry, but in some instances with other policies, you can choose to have a higher excess on that policy. You know, you might pay a little bit of premium before you'd need to go into the insurance. Does that kind of thing happen in the insurance policies that you deal with, or is that kind of a moot point?
Well, I would say on the excess, generally, I would see that insurance companies have a particular excess that applies to the policy that fits that particular sector. So, for example, a lot of Lloyd's markets would have 5,000 liability excess, and they just wouldn't be really on for moving it up or down. You could you could suggest that moving it up, but it doesn't tend to really result in much of a premium saving. So it's just a kind of, you know, that's their standard excess. And then some of the more local markets might have a slightly lower excess, but you wouldn't generally see the excess having a big impact. It just tends to be whatever it is. In terms of the other question about the types of claims, I suppose in the sector, liability claims are frequent. And so that's, you know, employees cutting fingers off or getting their hands caught in blades is quite common. Depending on how bad that is, you know, those claims can run to several hundred thousand, depending on how badly they catch their fingers, maybe how young the person is, and what their potential future loss of earnings is, and just generally how bad the accident is, and all the legal costs that go along with that. You know, and then if it's not too bad, it might be go a bit lower. But once the solicitors get involved, they tend to be quite expensive one way or another. Manual handling is an area I would say for people to look out for. Very hard to defend those claims. Obviously, you need to be doing your manual handling training and ideally have safe operating procedures around different tasks that are done within the business so that there is a defense there that can be mounted against manual handling claims. You know, sometimes those manual handling claims you see, they're very suspect, but very hard to defend. Fires are obviously less frequent, but more severe and, you know, can be massive payouts and traumatic events for the people involved, obviously. I suppose in terms of your premium, the bigger the payout, generally, the more impact it's going to have. In simple terms, you know.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. It's just interesting also what you're saying about the manual handling. I think kind of a lot of that falls under how good your risk management is and your health and safety. And a lot of the insurance must then surely go back to how good your documentation is then as well. You have to be well up with your documentation, apart from actually having things in place to have it documented and to have that viewable by your insurer, for example.
Yeah, it's a good risk management system. So it's things like having all your manual handling or other training up to date, having it recorded, having signed off that the employee was there and that it's tracked. And then things like safe operating procedures, so that if somebody does bring a claim because he stuck his hand in a machine, that you're producing your safe operating procedure that he was trained and shown how to use the machine. And you know, even if there was an incident where he was disciplined because his supervisor caught him deviating from the safe operating procedure, that would help. Sometimes you just find, I guess, that there's an accident happens and, you know, there might be just a safety statement that wasn't particularly well implemented in the business, and there's not a lot to go on in terms of defending the claim, you know.
Yeah, no, it's all fair enough. It's just what I'm trying to get across is the importance of, you know, being on the ball and staying on top of things for our members, you know. Just what sort of things could members be doing over the long term then to keep the insurance down? You know, what sort of things could they be doing on a repeat basis? You know, for example, they could invest in new technology. I know there's saws now that they detect a hand coming near it and they retract the blade. You know, would any of this sort of technology have a positive impact on insurance? If I'm moving on to, you know, if I'm doing a refit and I'm getting newer saws in or new technology, would that have any big bearing on my policy or would it help me out?
Definitely anybody who's doing a refurb, I would strongly recommend moving on to those more modern saws that have the detection in them. It's not that you're going to necessarily get a discount from your insurance companies day one. Like, they wouldn't have it in their underwriting guides to say that if somebody has one of these new saws with the detection in them that you get a 10% discount or anything like that. But it really just feeds into the what you really need to do is do everything to avoid claims, keep your record as clean as possible, That way you're going to be claims free. You're going to be on the green list for insurance companies as a claims free risk. So you're going to fit the category. You're going to open yourself up to more insurance companies, which is better rates. And so the two things kind of really feed off each other. So I would say, look, do everything possible to avoid having claims. So that's good risk management. A proactive approach to risk management in the business, which will keep your claims free record intact and will keep your premium down over time.
Good housekeeping, basically. I mean, as we've said a bit about, you know, even cleaning up around the factory floor and things like that. But go on. Some of the other things, maybe having monitored fire and burglar alarms might help us, things like that.
Yeah, like, so I suppose on the fire risk management, everybody wants to avoid a fire. Like, you just don't want to be there for a start. So the things that the insurance companies would kind of look for you to do are the things that are going to avoid you having the claim. But really, I suppose, to keep things on an even keel, really what you're trying to do is have a proactive approach to risk management so that you're going to keep the claims away and therefore you're going to pay the lowest amount of insurance that you possibly have to. On the liability side, I've spoke about having a strong system of health and safety and having somebody ideally in the business who's proactive in that area. On the fire risk management, you're talking about things like good extraction systems, good housekeeping, monitored fire alarms. On the security side, monitored burglar alarms. Also on the health and safety side, things like training matrices, good risk assessments, that sort of thing. And look, I know it's hard for businesses to do all this, but sometimes you do get clients who are ticking along and they're claims free and they're kind of getting on the green list for some of the insurance companies that are in the market. And they're, whilst they're claims free and they're ticking along and they're paying a premium, which is reasonable, and they kind of drop the ball a little bit on the health and safety. And then they have a claim and then their premium balloons. And it's just better to try and get ahead of it, you know, as much as possible before that happens.
Well, my own read of it in terms of insurance is that we're trying to pay, or the members are trying to pay, a lower premium. But on the other side of the coin, you as the insurer is trying to have repeat business, you know? So, I mean, we could be in a mutually beneficial situation here that you've repeat business and we're keeping our premiums low. And as you say, everybody ticks along. So long as we don't drop the ball, you know, it's kind of mutually beneficial.
Yeah. If you're doing the health and safety stuff, the risk management stuff, and hopefully you're keeping claims free, then you're going to access the cheapest insurances available out there on the market. If you're not doing that stuff and you do have one or two claims, you might find your premium doubling or whatever. It'll go up quite significantly. You might find that you're not accessing those insurers who just, you know, there's insurers there who just only quote for claims-free risks, as in claims-free in the last 5 years. Yeah. You might find yourself coming out of that category and maybe going into the London market where the rates are a lot higher if you have claims. So trying to keep ahead of it on the health and safety and risk management side as much as possible is the best way to go about it, you know.
James, thanks so much for taking the time to talk to me today. I really appreciate it. And just for members' information, your website is www.
It's martininsurance.ie.
Thank you so much for your time. And best of luck. All right. Cheers. Thanks a lot.